personal var det för det var som man har gjort det här och att det gav det Father God, we call us Son God, we call you so high. By the teachings of the three supreme jewels possessing the power of truth, may their life be altered and transformed. May they be dispelled, may they be pacified, may they be completely pacified. May all negative forces opposed to Dharma be completely pacified. May the host of 80,000 obstacles be pacified. May we be separated from problems and harmful conditions to Dharma. May all enjoyments be in accord with the Dharma. And may there be auspiciousness and perfect happiness here by our now. Obeisance to my Guru, the protector, Manjushri, who holds with his heart the spiritual text, symbolically seeing all things as they are, whose understanding shines forth as the sun, unclouded by defilements or traces of ignorance, who teaches in 60 ways with the patient love of a father for his only child, all creatures caught in the prison of samsara, confused in the darkness of their ignorance, overwhelmed by their suffering. He who is dragged from the proclamation of the Dharma arouses us from the stupor of our delusions and frees us from the iron chains of our karma. This powerful sword of wisdom used down suffering wherever it is brought out to you, clearing away the darkness of all ignorance. I entreat you, O Manjushri, whose prison body is born from the 112 marks of the Buddha, who has completed the 10 stages of achieving the highest perfection of the Bodhisattva, who has been pure from the beginning. O Manjushri, O loving one, in the brilliance of your wisdom, illuminate the darkness enclosing my mind, enlighten my intelligence and wisdom, so that I may gain insight into the Buddha's words and the text that explain them. So then we offer the Manloka of the universe as a way to request the teachings. So this is sort of symbolic and saying we're willing to give up everything in the universe, all the beautiful things, especially the things that we are most attached to, in order to be able to receive what is far more precious, which is Buddhist teachings. And also, this is a way to help reduce our attachment. So accumulate the merit necessary to help us understand and practice and realize the teaching. Trying to have that awareness as strongly as possible, real understanding of how all of these things, namely the stranger, human, non-human, all of these things have been missed in the life. Always have been dominant in one way or another. especially on the kindness of the mother, which I've received. From every single being has been my mother, and not just one time, but many, many times, every single being has been a father, brother, sister, best friend, teacher, saved my life, even sacrificed their life. Not just once, but many times in everything I've seen. So we just simply couldn't exist without it. Certainly, we have no happiness without memories of our life. And yet, all these kind mothers and memories are themselves, like myself, trapped themselves in existence. But unlike myself, the vast majority of memories. Right now, experiencing the worst torments of the world of samsara and low demands, even in the job and the dreams. I'm not as fortunate as myself because they haven't met the Dharma, they don't have the protection of the Dharma. And because of that, sending dreams in the confusion, controlled by self cherishing and dreams, trying to be controlled. To end it on this line, we can generate great compassion for all sentient beings, that we are compassion for all sentient beings, and generating a thought in the mind of life. I must be facing my future lives to free myself, free my mind of all confusion, all the limitations, awaken all possible qualities, achieve the enlightened state, will enable me to live perfectly. Shows this right now, approaching us, coming towards us, and when it is directly above the crown of our heads, imagine that it then dissolves into blissful golden light, so that that light can then pour down into us, blessing the mind, so that we are able to understand this touch properly, and the blessing of life. short time on doing some simple breathing exercise, such as the mind and mind breathing exercises, just to focus on the clearer, more concentrated mind, so you can use that level of mind to do something you don't think about. So yeah, just to summarize where we are, so the Buddha has emphasized, of course, that the very source of all our suffering is our ignorance, the fact that we are misconceiving or misexperiencing, falsely experiencing ourselves or phenomena. But that false experience of self and phenomena is the very basis of all delusion. Jealousy and so on about this misconception of self. So it means that misconceives self and what phenomena. And because we have a delusion to engage in negative actions, and this produces suffering in this life, but also the requirement in this from those negative actions arising, and the suffering in the future life. It's the same time. So, if we want to be free of suffering ourselves, we have to develop the wisdom that is the direct antidote to that, to the ignorance. Just developing loving kindness and compassion, that will never free us from suffering. As a compassionate being, a loving being, we can be able to deal more effectively with life, and especially with other people. Either one through us or others, our compassion towards others will stop the suffering from suffering. Our compassion and it itself is not the cause of the suffering. The only thing that will cease suffering is the wisdom arising the true nature of self and the only that is what the Buddha has done. So we have to recognize So the wrong view that you have that the evening's parade is this false appearance that the evening's parade plays is called that the appearance of the apparent existence or true existence. I think I'll use the term apparent existence because true existence is a little bit confusing for people because in fact this appearance of true existence is false. So let me prove it to you. True existence is not true, it is completely false. So that's a little bit confusing. So another term for that is especially used in the high school philosophy to get especially used this term in the view of apparent existence. So it's one thing to be able to by studying the teachings to intellectually understand what this view is, that what the apparent existence means, and what its opposite is, but that's not enough. We have to apply this intellectual understanding in meditation so that at some point we can really recognize that, oh, it is. This is how I'm experiencing myself. I am seeing this experience in myself in this inherently existing way. Right now, so I would use this example because it's all true. It's a pretty nice example tonight. So the Buddha is saying that the way these flowers appear to us at the moment is that they appear inherently existing. So what does that mean? It means that they seem to appear out there, separate from us, their own side, under their own power, with their own characteristics, self-sufficient, self-substantial existence, truly existing, really there in their own side, not really. And if that is true, if that appearance was true, it would mean, it would imply that they were independent, these flowers existed independently, not dependent on them. So by thinking about that more and more, we can start to understand that. But when we look at things, we don't see happiness right now. Although we are seeing them, we don't actually recognize that that's happening. Does that make any sense?
It does, but how would the Buddha see the flower, like from our point of view, visually, like on in a very visual kind of sense? That's not what I'm just trying. Yeah, I know, but I'm just trying to.
No, don't do that, because the point is not to worry about what the Buddha can see or can see. It's, what I'm trying to talk about is to identify the object through the thinking. We're not going to have this intellectual understanding of what inherent existence means. We have to apply that understanding to be able to see that. Yes, that is actually exactly how I'm seeing these flowers. Right? And of course this applies to everything, like the way we see or experience ourselves. We have to identify the object to be able to think. Or maybe a little bit, I think it's a better example, but you're told that by your friend, that a friend of them, friend X, is coming to visit, and friend X looks like this. Friend X is so tall and so wide, has this color hair, which is kind of wavy and this and that, and it's this dirt, the words this long, and you know, they have this kind of face and these kind of eyes. So you have an image, we can create an image in our mind of that person. So really, 5,000 people, thing, because of that image in your mind, then you see, oh, I don't mind that. Oh, then you identify that. Oh, that's something. Yes. So that's what we're in this case, we're trying to get rid of it. So if we get rid of it, something that's causing this all this trouble, we have to wait for the time to actually take it and not make the slightest mistake. So, yes. So, so just a little thing about, so remember, the basis. There is the, like right now, we are actually, although we don't know, or we do now because we're Buddhists, but we are seeing that a person in the street, they say, well, how do these clouds appear to you? They didn't say, oh, they appear in the natural existence. You know, but that's how they are actually appearing to us. Says that's how things are appearing. But what is the basis of so we are seeing inherently existing flowers, but the basis of that is a flower that validly exists. The flower that validly exists is the new label flower, the flower that arises, or the chemical arising flower that arises. So there's the newly labeled flower. That flower does exist. The life and life. But ignorance gets in the way, and there's the newly labeled flower. The ignorance of that appears back to the mind of ignorance as currently existing. So we do that with everything. So there is the person that does exist, is the newly labeled person, the mere of, which again is a life made. An inherently existing flower, which we are seeing is made, it's a fantasy. There is no such thing as an actual inherently existing flower, except an inherently existing object. It seems to us, for ignorance, it seems to have been really good. But it feels as though we are only existing. The Buddha says no, that there isn't anything that is infinitely existing. That's all we believe. But it doesn't mean that that doesn't mean there's nothing existing at all. Things do exist, but merely labeled as the thing arises. They exist in the life of it. Just momentarily arising, depending on all sorts of causes and conditions past, and particularly depending on our mind. Our mind. So the basis of the wrong view of self is
that we believe we inherently existed.
So right now we're experiencing ourselves on as inherently existing. What is the basis of that? Well, yes, because of ignorance, but what is the ignorance, what does ignorance experience have to generate this creation now? What's the basis of the inner physics you found? Well, the new language of flower. So what is the basis of the new language you found? Really? Yeah,
a flower.
Which does exist like a new. We remembered all of that perfectly from last week. But it is important to try to study this and think about it. Because if you remember, all the other schools started, the Buddhist schools started. There is a person that is the basis of the wrong view, the they say, but the person that is the basis of the wrong view is either all the five aggregates, or one of the five aggregates, such as the mind and so on. Remember? But that being for the person who can say that can't be the basis of the wrong view. That is, the five aggregates is the basis of the wrong view of the mind. Basis of the wrong view of I is the new label. Because that does exist. Trouble is, when I say that, I shouldn't have been the whole of the world. It is just as the light of rainbow, light of the is just the invention of the system of God, just a new label. So that's the basis. So there's that, that very subtle feeling of ignorance then perceives that as the grasp of it's completely solid. So what we have to understand is that if there was only way it exists, it would have been inherently the same as the five aggregates, body and mind. It would have to be exactly the same, inherently the same, or it would have to be something inherently completely different from the five aggregates. There's no other possibility. This is the law of the excluded middle that we convince that there is no other way that I could exist. And for example, if I was to say, if an animal exists, it either has to be a cat or a dog. This is rubbish, because there are many other kinds of animals than cats and dogs. Many other possibilities. But in the case of an inherently existing eye, we need to understand an inherently existing eye. Either has to be exactly the same as the body and the mind and the kid. Or it has to be something completely different, inherently different. There's no other possibility. How could the eye could be perhaps other than something being a five aggregates? Or something. It's not like the situation of an animal having to be actually wrong. There are many other possibilities for an animal to be able to handle something that we can't do. Because when we say, oh, do the children do the doctor do the, you know,
I thought you talked to someone else.
Yeah, you weren't sure.
No.
So you pointed to me.
Yes.
Yes. This is what we do.
Well done, Dad.
No, let me just be cheating. Like all of us. No, sorry, dear. We're just showing that at least superficially we do think, you know, we don't think that we don't say, oh, maybe. We say, no, me is somewhere here where the five aggregates are. So I don't think we have to do inherently oneness with them or something. And the only other possibility is something not the five aggregates, not at all the five aggregates, but it isn't. So then, in this meditation, in the four-point analysis, one checks, one tries to investigate whether the I could, you know, could be the five aggregates or something completely different. And that, you remember the argument. So there was the argument that if the I was inherently the same as the five aggregates, oneness with the five aggregates, then it would mean that, what would mean for the symbols? One failing example would be that we wouldn't be able to distinguish between I and any of the five aggregates at all. The other one is that if we oneness with the five aggregates, we would have to say, we inherently five aggregates, then if there's only one eye, we have the same, there's only five aggregates, or all five aggregates are the same. If there's one eye, it's inherently the same as the five aggregates, one wouldn't be able to distinguish the five aggregates, there's one aggregate. There is a body. And the other way is if the eye is inherently one of the five aggregates, since there's five aggregates, and each aggregate has many aspects, there have to be many eyes. But we don't grasp it. It is an essential one eye, one eye. Anyway, we're on now on page 125, where it first talks about the consequence of the self being created and destroyed. So the third fallacy, if the self and the aggregates are of one nature, reveals the consequences of the self's being created and destroyed. So just as the aggregates, which are asserted through the same as the person, so if the person since the aggregates are created at birth and destroyed at birth, so too when the person has been created and destroyed. The person is apparently the same as the five aggregates. So since the aggregates come from existence at birth, that would mean that the I would come into existence at birth. And since the aggregates are destroyed at birth, so when what is created destroyed exists inherently, the person that acted this could not be anything other than of the same or different natures, and the both of these would be unacceptable. So, and then he explains how that would be unacceptable. So, if they were the same, so if they were inherently the same, each established by way of its own characteristics would be as if the person of this and the previous life were the same without distinction. So we follow that. You have to say that if the I exists, then it's exactly the same as the I of the past, the previous one. And if that would be the case, and you are the continuity of your previous life were the same, a person would have been born in this life without having God. Because he would be, or he or she would be inseparably one with the person you are in this life. It is unreasonable to make such statements because a person who has been born. So, for example, if we say, the person is inherently the same as the five acres, especially the mind. So since the mind existed from the previous life, then the eye is the same as the mind, then the eye of the past life is exactly the same as the eye of this one. Inherently the same. But that's not possible. Because actually even who I am now is different from what I was beginning at this life. And I'm certainly different from who I was in the past. Because even if we assume that in our past life we were human beings, which we may not have been, but even if we were, may not have been Australians, for example. The reverb in this country, or most of us, the reverb in this country in this life, but it doesn't mean that we were, or from whatever country you came from, it doesn't mean in your past life. That's what I'm getting at. So, in Hume's fundamental treatise, it says, if that God were born as this man, such a person would be permanent, and somehow they have to be a human being, and a God at the same time. That's impossible. Some of them are God realms. Persons. On the other hand, Some connection between the meaning of this life and the meaning of the past life. Just as, and of course, the easiest way to understand it is there is a connection between the I of Tibet. Why I exist now, the I existing now is the continuing of existing. 1 hour before that, today's I exists as the result of yesterday's I. It's not the same I. We're not 100% the same person as we were yesterday. Pretty much the same. But still, a little bit. Certainly, the eye of right now is the resulting continuum of an eye when I was 1 year old, 6 months old, 1 year old, is a continuum. And so then that goes back to the eye that was in the womb. And that goes back to the eye that was conceived. And that goes back before the eye that was there's the I in the boundaries. And before that, going back, there's the continuum of the I of the birth of the last one dying. And before that, there's the I going back in business again. So those I's are different, but they're not inherent. There's a continuum. Yes. And the art. this light is arising depending on a particular mental continuum. And that mental continuum is changing moment by moment, but it is, in my, in this moment, is the result of a discrete continuum, mental continuum that existed in the previous moment. When my mind now isn't the result of your mind, my mind now is the existing now today, is the result of my mind existing yesterday. It's not the result of your mind existing yesterday. It's what the spirit continues. And so, because that mind is existing, arising moment by moment, and the other aspects going with it, there is the new capable time that arising moment by moment. Well, inherent existence implies, one of the things I was trying to point out is that the different schools talk about different things. They talk about a self-sufficient person, or thing selfly, existing self-sufficiently, simply, you know, substantially. I was talking about things existing self-sufficiently, from their own side, under their own power. Truly, cousin Nick would say that all of these really come down to the same thing, and are really no different than inherent existence. And what inherent existence implies is that what Lama Zogchen Rinpoche explains, if things were inherent existence, if they were, if they were not, if they were, it would imply, it would mean that things did not depend on anything.
So that's what
I in a sense, yes. Rinpoche makes the point, when we run, when we experience, we don't experience them directly as being because intellectually we know things being dependent on other things. But we do experience them as inherently existing. And if that was true, it would imply that they were inherently independent, that they were independent. That's why Robert Zong Bhavu says the easiest way to realize is to realize that things can only exist arising within, depending on paths, conditions, the mind. Once we start to really get that, we will see that there is no way things could be independent. Therefore, they couldn't exist, even though they appear. I think it's kind of easier when you think about not so much the object itself, but you know, when we look, especially these, I don't know how to use it, but you know, I look at these clouds and I think, oh, these are very good, they're doing whatever. You know? And why do you, of course, there's no teacher sitting on the sky throwing up having this incredible understanding of things, but just as an ordinary person, why do I think this is beautiful? Because when I look at something I think is beautiful or I experience it beautiful, I don't have the experience that this depends on me and this and that. Why I think this is beautiful is because it is. It's obviously beautiful. It's written there from its own side. It's telling me I'm good at the Bible. Isn't it? Don't you think so? No? No? No?
That's your perception.
Yeah.
It just is.
Hmm?
Not necessarily pretty, it just is.
I don't think we're being honest.
That's not nice.
No.
But I have any other.
Some. You're just giving me a part of the line. You're not saying what you really experienced.
Yeah, possibly, yes, I get what you're saying.
If you look at people with incredible attachment, what would you think? Or hatred? Incredible violence and broken.
But is just the person alive or something itself?
No, no, you're giving psychological. No, we're not trying to investigate the truth. We're trying to talk about how we as deluded people experience things, not how things actually. If you were to stop someone who's completely insane in anger about to kill someone because they said blue to me, and you said, do you think this is because you're projecting something onto this person? They wouldn't say, oh, yeah, that's why I'm trying to kill him, because I'm projecting him out as my father, and I didn't like my father, and he reminds me of that. They just see someone who is really bad. They are really. Sorry?
The alternative goes into
Oh yes, yes, of course. We all spout that stuff. But I'm
Don't get too angry.
No.
Sorry.
Now we're trying to define the object is a we're not. We're trying to recognize how we actually experience it. When you eat something delicious, when you check, honestly, when you eat it and there's this really nice taste, do you think, oh, this is just my mind telling me this? I've just been conditioned to like this. We just think, wow, this is why it's not important because it's really delicious. The deliciousness is in the food. That's why we put more in our mouth because it's really, really, we have this word, really quick. Real, it's real. Really trying to think, really trying to lock that skin on. Yes, but we don't experience things as though they depend on our mind and this and that and the other. That's wrong. Whatever is good or bad is there from chemists, and the goodness, the badness, the this or the that is coming what is beauty in love is in the eye of the in our culture? What does it mean? Because I don't think it's implying that it's the only thing it is.
It's our perception of somebody who's moving themselves, that perception kind of out onto a group that becomes effective.
But does it mean that it is something in that person that is beautiful and that you are able to appreciate? But really, to investigate why we think something is beautiful. Sorry? No, there's not. No. The problem really is, conventionally, there are beautiful things in the world, conventionally, there are ugly things. There are good things in your condition, the bad things in your the trouble is experienced in them as inherently bad. That's when attachment and form of illusions come. Sorry? Yes, that's true. That is true. It is definitely true. That's what people are taught, and it's true. And we can intellectually know that. But look, look. I also happen to know that this, because as you said, these flowers are permanent. So in a few days, these flowers will be dead. Actually, that's interesting because I think only in the English language they use the term dead for flowers. What is that saying?
Well, it's
not
dead.
Sorry, is that dead?
No,
for dead
no.
Flowers.
No. Like they've stopped flowering. Or they've stopped.
Withered. But not dead.
No.
So it's quite concrete in English that
they're dead.
Anyway, so I know that there's, I do know that there's going to be dead and you know, ugly and the water stinks and it's disgusting. But intellectually, I know that and I can remember that. But even so, maybe I'm starting to realize and begin to think that, so maybe it's not as strong as before. But as soon as you see something beautiful, the mind grasps that it's going to stay like that. seeing this, when you look at it, that is, you know, that's it. And impermanence, I know, because, you know, understanding impermanence is not the same as infinite, but it helps. And vice versa, when you have the ignorance, what goes with that is a grasping of its permanence. It seems to be really like that. That's, you know, an inherently existing thing. It's also a permanent thing. It just doesn't change. We don't see the totality of it. It's just a very concrete thing. Yeah. No, no, but they do it because, you know, that all of that is incorporated. Because there's this.
No, I mean, that is true.
What else? Oh, yeah, well, if one could realize it, you just said it's incredible.
So you sound that when you look at these flowers, we only see them as they are now, not as they're going to come after the
time. No, of course, no, of course we can't see their future. No, I'm not saying that. We tend to, of course, as soon as, like, in a class like this, as soon as we start talking, for those who have got some background, we have some awareness now of these things. But if you try to take them on and back before one became aware of all of this, and think about it, people have no awareness of the distinctions of these things. But especially with a delusion, at the moment, especially when any particular delusion, attachment, hatred, jealousy, pride is operating, the object of that delusion is so concrete. You know? So if you have, just taking this as an example of anything beautiful, from beautiful people to beautiful objects, when you see a beautiful object, it appears, you know, so concrete. And that's why we get so attached to it as well, because it's inherently like that forever. Even if intellectually we know of the opposite, to the delusion which arises because the delusion is an extension of ignorance. It's just an outgrowth, it's a child, it's a byproduct, it's just another layer of illusion. There's the basic illusion of inherent existence, and then there's the illusion of inherent attached to the inherent object. I have aversion to the inherent ugly object, bad person. It doesn't appear to me, as we experience it, that the beauty of this flower is really the beauty of the world. It doesn't appear, I've known it for 3 years now through the comments of the gurus and meeting the Dharma. I know it a little bit, I even, oh my gosh, I probably got to help with some of this, but I think I even understand it. But, you know, I don't have the realization. So in reality, when we look at this thing, it looks as though the beauty is a win-win thing. From this. But remember, we're really trying to talk about the name of things, which is people how they go about thinking. It's so ingrained. All the past, because we have new things and new things each line. Beginning those things. Not just beginning the conditioning from this line, not just from last line, beginning those conditioning. And there will be
on that note, would you like a cup of tea?
Yes.
Would you like to cut the toilet?
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. So the last one we need to do is come along with the thing and what? If persons linked together by form and later lives were of a different nature, existed by way of their own characteristics, it would be impossible for there to be any connection between them. There would be no relationship in terms of the causes and results of actions between yourself, because they would both be of a different nature. Their arising would be unconnected, because they are both something is inherent means not in as the inherent existence of one thing contradicts it being related to something else. Because if something is independent, is inherently existing, the evidence would imply it's independent, not in one thing. Something, if it didn't depend on it wouldn't be related to it. It couldn't be related to it. Because as soon as you're related to something, you're depending on it in some way. Not necessarily in a negative way, but if there's a relationship, there's a dependence. But if something was independent, if something was totally as soon as you connect with something else, there's some kind of relationship between us. For example, just see what is happening. If your car, if you've got a car, if you had an internally existing car, if you bought a brand new, super friendly, if it was possible, currently existing power, you would never have to dust within the touch. Because if you've got an inherently clean heart, how could it be dust? As soon as there's one speck of dust on the inherently clean heart, it's no longer a clean heart. You wouldn't actually be able to. It doesn't depend on anything, so how the door it doesn't depend on anything.
Just this.
Oh, of course, yes. Because the pain doesn't depend on anything. And that's why we can open that open door. The door's closed. So as the inherent existence of one thing constitutes as being related to something else, it is inherently a positive relationship between them, because they share neither of the two relations, cause and effect, or being of the same identity. So these are the only two kind of relationships you can have with two objects or two things, is either a relationship of cause and effect, or being in the same identity. So if persons were to exist inherently, they would have not to depend on anything else. But if something has a relationship with them from us, it must also depend on something else. So if the person inherently existed, it wouldn't depend on anything, meaning it wouldn't depend on fire, it wouldn't depend. And as we said last week, if the I inherently existed, and therefore it didn't depend on the moment, if it fly by the words, the body could be sitting here and I could be somewhere else. The I could be here and my body could fly out the room. But that's impossible. And as I was saying last week, the only reason you can say I. Because the I that does exist, the merely labeled I, is what is merely labeled by the name in dependence on the five aggregates, what the five aggregates are doing. If the mind is meditating, we're trying to meditate, we can say, I am meditating. So we can deposit a really low, a happy heart. If the mind is happy. If the mind is unhappy, you can't say what you can say. You can't accurately deposit a happy heart if the mind is unhappy. If someone has a very tall body, you can say he or she is tall. That tall person is not something separate from the body. It's not the same as the body. It's all. if there is an inherently existing free person, that inherently existing free person might be the same as the body, as the whole body, or something completely. But for someone believing in that existence, an inherent existing person will possess an inherent existing person. So Chandrakirti Sakaman says, whatever exists individually by way of its own consciousness cannot possibly belong to one continuity. Why? Because if it belonged to a continuity, it would depend on what the ways to belong to a continuity is your lives. My mind now belongs to a continuity. My mind now depends on not the mind that existed an hour ago, yesterday, the day before. But something that exists individually, separately, by way of its own consciousness, it wouldn't depend on. So then follows, if persons were not of the same continuity, recollection of past lives would be unacceptable, or it would be impossible. This is written by people who had collective points, and apart from that, had perhaps even a deeper wisdom of belief in it. Maybe belief or maybe even belief in it, but maybe we don't have the same deep belief or thinking of the five people in these traditional backgrounds as well. I always find strange that I meet people who call themselves Buddhist, and they're sincere of taking refuge, but they say they don't believe in the past life. Well, I don't know what sort of course that is, actually. Well, they don't talk in Philippine, the world of course not there. I mean, you have this famous example, so John Cook, a Stephen Batchelor, for instance, quite famous, very popular writer. This person So this is why you can have to, of course, pass lives pieces. But if the person reminded something of you, one wouldn't be able to remember past lives. You know, a realized being or someone with their voice can say, I remember my past lives. Is that hard? It's surprising. When you say, I remember my past lives, and there's not a separate I remember my lives, it's a separate I. But when it's because the mind is remembered, it's possible to say, I remember. And then it goes on to say, then if past lives were unacceptable, such were the case, he could contribute many sutras in which the Buddha recalled his previous lives and the Bodhisattva on the spiritual path. Even our own recollection of previous actions would be impossible if the self of today were inherently different from that of yesterday. So if we are different from the person of today is different from the person of yesterday, but not in anything. You are the I is inherently different from the I of yesterday. It would be more of a slight. Don't destroy the Moreover, the wholesome and unwholesome actions that someone has done in a previous life would be dissipated and he or she would not experience their outcome, because there wouldn't be a relationship continuing from life to life for someone to experience the karma result if there was this inherent difference. This is because we cannot assert that these actions would be experienced by another person who is of the same. This would be like saying a person meets in this life with the happy and miserable results of prior actions without having done it. So this is completely contradictory to the law of cause and effect. We can't in this life experience results of actions that we didn't create in past life. If we created an action in past lives doing bad, we will experience the results in future. If we haven't created a particular negative action in the past life, there's no way we can experience the same result That's how karma works. You know, if our movement, if we create a negative action in a particular life, we, the continuity of I, will experience the result in the future. Not someone else. It's the continuity of I that will experience it. Thus, having sought through the path of logical reasoning to ascertain the fallacies of the person and the aggregates existing by way of their own private existence while being of the same nature, we should maintain this understanding. According to our own tradition, meaning according to our own tradition, we must accept that the person and the aggregates are nominally or conventionally of the same entity, which is an extremely subtle and so in Majjhimika Prasangika view, the aggregates and the person are conventionally of the same entity, but they're not the same, they're not absolutely identical. Same entity in the sense that, you know, like the body is sitting, therefore I am sitting. It's that same entity. If I'm thinking, the mind is thinking, I'm thinking. So there's the same entity between aggregates and mind. But it doesn't mean that the I is exactly the same as the aggregate. So it says here, so the body is extremely subtle and moving. Slowly, slowly. Don't get upset if you don't understand this now. This is something we lifetimes. We're stuck. We should be happy that we have met these two truths and have the chance to really understand it and realize it. Superficial level of values, beliefs, and I guess right now we can identify very strongly with our body. This is why we tend to spend so much time on our body one way or another, including mass worries and no parking and exercise and doing this and that, and worrying about what we look like and about how we can do ourselves. But that's only a very superficial wrong view of self. And but deep down in the teaching it says, eventually you will discover, like you discovered, that every single being is grasping that there is this inherently existing being, which is not any of the five things, it's something completely itself. Because that's what it means to be there's this innate philosophy that there is a meaning that is not isn't wondering why or not, because that's another thing. It's really the problem. It's not totally from its own stuff. It's such an irony. It's just an illusion. Even its mates, it seems to create transformers of it into something that can really move the concrete actuality. But does exist. The life of movement is arising dependent on others. Nominally, suddenly, not ultimately. What they say, some entity with different voices. Because if you think about it, the only way that we can achieve, the only way we can think about ourselves is in relation to the higher balance. And you think of yourself, take that and totally separate, absolutely. On the one hand, our innate ignorance is actually the reason that it is an art, it is totally separate. But on the conscious level, in reality, in truth, in the only way that I exists is in relation to one of the separate of the whole, both in relation to ourselves and others. When you think of another person, you can only think of another person in relation to your body and your mind, your personality, your personality, for example. Or what you mean if you think about, I'm going to become such and such. When you think of this eye in this kind of period, and I'm going to go and shop tomorrow. So how can you think about this eye going and shopping? Will you go shopping without your body? So in fact, that we can't think of ourselves separate without thinking of some aspect of one or several of the five elements. This shows that the I that validly exists, but which is the basis of the basis of what it means to create the conclusion of it, truly is the I that does exist is something. It's not the same as the paradigms, but it's always existing in only existing in relation to the paradigms. The only way we can think about it could say, I am. I wonder what I am. So we have to make the bodies for the bodies of prison. She says, maybe one of the reasons you're free today is because, and she says something along the lines that, although I have yet to study that text,
yes.